I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet, work and study, the Awabakal and Worimi peoples. I extend that to the land on which our listeners meet. I pay respect to elders past, present and emerging. Thank you to our sponsor, Espresso Warriors Katara. The CCJS would like to invite you to be involved in our Policy for Change competition, where you have the opportunity to submit a 1,200 to 2,000 word essay to the Attorney General. This competition is open to any student from any discipline and any year. Submissions are now open and close on June 13 at 12 a.m. Also, don't forget about our giveaway collaboration with Hillebrand Shaw Co., where you could win an amazing digital planning package. Follow the UON CCJS and Hillebrand Shaw underscore co on Instagram to find out more. Welcome back to the UON CRIM podcast, episode 4. I am your host, Jessica Horn. Today's episode is an intriguing one. I can't wait for you to listen as I talk with Megan, who has worked as an embalmer for many years, both privately and as a police contractor. If you are unfamiliar with what embalming is, stay tuned because you're in for a treat. Hi, Megan, how are you?
Well, thank you.
That's good. So we'll kick it off. What is an embalmer and what kind of training do you need for embalming?
An embalmer is somebody who takes care of deceased people, and they are trained in funeral mortuary work. So you have different levels. So you have somebody who can work in a mortuary as a mortuary assistant, and then you have an embalmer. So an embalmer is somebody who specialises using chemicals for preservation and sanitisation of a deceased person. Mm-hmm. So you do need to have an understanding, and your training involves understanding anatomy, circulatory systems, that sort of processes. So the main reason we do embalming is to sanitise and preserve a deceased person.
Yep. And what made you get into this profession?
It is something that I've wanted to do for as long as I can remember. So I think I was about 5 the first time I said to my family I wanted to work with dead people, and they were absolutely horrified.
I can imagine.
But it's just something I don't know why. I don't know what part of it. I've just always had a fascination with death and the whole industry. I've just loved it. And but it's not the easiest profession to get involved in, I have to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It took me a long time to get involved in that, I have to say, like till I found work and got trained and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And could you tell us a little bit more about the process of embalming? Take us through a typical day.
Okay, in the funeral industry, there is no such thing as a typical day, I have to say. No two deceased people are ever the same. Mm-hmm. There's a similar process and there's a protocols that we follow, but everybody is different depending on how they've passed away, whether it was a natural death to an unnatural death, because the processes are different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people's body sizes can change what you do. So basically, and there's different levels of embalming as well. So say somebody has passed away and the family just want to spend some time with them. So you do things like a partial embalm. So that is more for cosmetic purposes and to sanitize the person so the family can come in and see them and touch them and kiss them and things with no risk to the family or to anything like that, because a deceased person does carry a bit of bacteria and different things like that, so you're not going to catch anything, but it's just nice that to know that they've been cleaned. And so basically you would start by washing the deceased person. You'd wash them, wash their hair, dress them in the clothes that the family have provided. And in the process of that, embalming is basically a bit like having a blood transfusion. So we inject the chemical in, we make a small incision in an appropriate place and raise an artery, and then we'll inject the chemical in using a machine and drain the blood out. So basically, it's like having a blood transfusion, you know, removing the blood products that speed up decay processes and replace those with chemical. And then and the level of the strength of the chemical is depending on how long we need to preserve the person. So, for instance, if we were just needed somebody for a couple of days because they'll be buried or cremated within a couple of days, you would only use a very light chemical. Whereas if you had somebody who needed to be sent home to overseas, like say they come from Italy, for instance, and need to go home because that's a cultural thing, that obviously needs a much stronger chemical and mm-hmm. a longer process of embalming.
Mm-hmm.
So there's sort of, there's just no one straight answer to that question, basically, yeah.
Everyone's
so
different.
It all comes down to, you know, the size of the person, how long we need to preserve them. Yeah, so it all just, yeah, there's not a straight answer, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. And yeah. Does everyone get embalmed when they die?
No. So that comes down to the family, so, and cultural status. So it's very common if you are Italian, Greek, if you're Maori, they're the main cultural reasons that they're done. If somebody needs to be sent from Australia back to another country, embalming is required by law in that instance for preservation. It can go the other way. Jewish and Muslim cultures, it's almost a taboo. You never embalm somebody from that cultural background. So, yeah, not everybody gets embalmed.
Mm-hmm. And have you ever been really moved by someone's body or circumstances? And have you had any really confronting or challenging cases?
Definitely. It's little things that I guess can make something very moving. Apart from working in the mortuary, I've also worked in other aspects of the funeral industry. So I do attend services and things like that. And you can sit with the family and arrange the funeral and follow that whole process right through to the actual funeral taking place.
Mm-hmm.
So you do get to be involved in the family, so you get to know them. And I've certainly had some very confronting and challenging cases, both from a physical where somebody's been died tragically in an accident and the body's very damaged, but also from just emotionally where you've dealt with the family, so you're emotionally involved in that. So, but yes, you certainly do have some challenging cases from both perspectives, yeah.
Yeah, I could imagine. And what's the process with police working with crime scenes and that around that those sort of circumstances?
Yeah, so what happens is once the police attend an unnatural death, so the difference is you have a natural death where somebody's just died in a nursing home or they've died in a hospital, or you can have an unnatural death, and that's things like your car accidents, your suicides, murders, that sort of thing. Now, what will happen, the police are called to the scene, and then they then call what they call the police contractors. So they're a firm that's usually locally based, whatever city you're close by with, and they send their staff out and they transfer that deceased person from the scene to the forensic unit, and then it's in the hands of the coroners. There's certain protocols that must be followed in those cases, and then once the coroner has done the post-mortem, and that can be just by a scan, or they can actually do a full post-mortem process, they would then, the family then use a funeral director, and they use the funeral director, and the funeral director then organises the transfer of the deceased into a funeral home's care.
Mm-hmm.
So, so it always goes to the coroner first, and then from there that's when the family can make their decisions about what they want done. I've had the privilege of working as a police contractor, so I have been involved in all that process, mm-hmm. which is great because I have a good understanding of what happens, mm. and having to work with the coroner's office, and that was mostly through the Newcastle Forensic. There is where I've had my dealings, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could imagine that would be a very intense job, but very interesting.
Yeah, but I guess anytime there's an unnatural death, it's the families who really, particularly in a suicide situation,
yeah.
the family struggle because they just feel really helpless. Mm-hmm. So when the family are at the scene, the police have an incredible job of how they have to deal with that. So, and we only get a small glimpse into that. Mm. I admire the police for, how they handle those situations.
Yeah, definitely. And have you had to deal with unusual requests from families?
I have. Some of them you think, how do families think these things? I had a situation where the family asked me to remove the gold from all the deceased teeth because they thought they would melt it down and get the money from the gold teeth. So that, I've had some very unusual requests.
Yeah.
Obviously that was denied. and I've also had a request where they asked me for the titanium from the hips and
you're kidding.
Replacements. So they're very unusual requests. It hasn't happened often, but you do get some very strange things like that, yeah.
There's always one or two.
There is, yes. And just when you think you've kind of seen and heard it all, something new comes along.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you do get it.
And do you think that witnessing dead bodies affects the way you view death?
Yes, and I think it affects the way families deal with death as well. I find it I think it's a very healing thing, and I think for families to come in and what I do to help families, so I can improve that experience and improve the way the person looks after passing, that then is a healing process for the family, mm-hmm. Especially in circumstances that an unnatural death has occurred, such as a car accident or a suicide, to be able to, or say the person's died in hospital with lots of tubes in and lots of IVs and all that, and to have all that removed, put them back in their own clothes instead of hospital gowns, it can be a really healing process for the family. Mm-hmm. I think if they've been in a nursing home and the family have been there for a few days to say goodbye, maybe they don't have the need to see the person again. But I think, it is a healing process, and I think people, it helps them through that grieving process as well.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. And do you believe in any kind of conscious existence after physical death? Loaded question.
Yeah, it is. I have a strong Christian belief myself, so I do believe that there is something after death. I certainly think that, and it's a very personal thing, but I do believe there is something after our death. And when I'm dealing with a deceased person, I do think that it's the vessel of somebody, but I still think it needs to be treated with the utmost respect and care. Mm-hmm. And I do think there's something more. Mm.
Have you had any sort of spooky incidents or anything when you're embalming someone?
I have had the feeling that, not creepy, not scary, I have had the feeling that somebody's in the room watching me,
yeah.
sort of thing. It's like there's a presence there, but it wasn't a scary, it wasn't spooky.
Yeah.
The only spooky experience I did to myself, which was kind of weird, funny, but the family had had their viewing and they'd asked for their transistor to be left because they always listened to the races, and the little transistor to be put in their pocket and left it running because they just said, till the batteries go. And we did all of that, and then the next morning I came into work and I'd forgotten about the transistor running and I could hear voices coming from the coffin. And I'm like, that's really weird. But that was just like a 2-second thing until my brain kicked in. But that's kind of the only thing. But it was more funny than it was anything else.
So. Yeah. And have you ever worked on a friend or relative, or would you usually ask a colleague to do that?
No, I've done it on more than one occasion. So I've done it a few times on friends and on my own family members. It's one of those hard things because you feel very honoured to be able to care for them, and it does bring up a whole batch of emotion.
Mm.
But at the same time, like, you want to do it, you don't want somebody else to do it. So you sort of have conflicting emotions, but the fact that you wanting to care for them overrides that you can kind of just get above the sadness of it and do that. So I find it an honour to be able to care for somebody I know, and I have had to do it more than once, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. It would take a certain person. So, yeah, I applaud you for that. I don't think I could work on my family members.
Yeah.
It would be pretty special. And I guess you saying to that healing process, that would definitely attribute to that.
Yeah, and it does. I recently lost my brother-in-law and
I'm sorry.
He had what they call a cosmetic embalm, which was just, fairly mild embalm. And after I finished the process and just had him and washed him, my husband, being his brother, came in and helped me dress him. And he found that extremely healing.
Yeah,
just to be able to dress his brother and be part of that.
Yeah.
And a lot of families culturally will be involved in the dressing process,
mm-hmm.
not the embalming process, but just dressing.
The dressing.
And they find it a very comforting thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Last question. What would you suggest to someone interested in embalming or in the funeral industry?
If it's your passion, pursue it. It's if that's what you're meant to do, certainly don't go in it for money, thinking there's money to be had, because that's just not at all. you do it for the love of the job. But go talk to people if you can, like go in and talk to people about the actual job and what it involves. I have so many people have said to me over the time, I just want to do the makeup, but it's so much more than that.
Yeah.
You know, like the makeup is like the tiny little bit that you do at the end. So if you're thinking that it's a sort of a glamorous job, it's not. But you need to be a very flexible person. You have to be able to be flexible and willing to learn. But if you really want to be involved, it's a great industry to be involved in. I am a mentor to a student embalmer,
mm-hmm.
and I think, you know, it's the best thing that you can, I find it's a very rewarding job. It's not everybody's idea of a job, but I find it's very rewarding, and the fact that you can help other people, and it's a service to families that you can do that. But certainly if you've got a passion, but persevere. It's not easy to get into. You have to be persevere a little bit till you get that first break. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Well, the student is very lucky to have you, and we are very lucky to hear from you. Thank you so much.
No problems at all.
Thank you.
Bye.
You've been listening to the UON Crim Podcast, hosted by Jessica Horn, run by the University of Newcastle Criminology and Criminal Justice Society. I would like to thank today's guest, Megan, and to the podcast editor, Nick Minch. Please stay tuned for our next episode, released next month. You can stay up to date by following the UON CCJS on social media. See you soon!